Bo earned his doctorate at the University of Kansas, and I first met Bo when I was in junior high. So I feel like I've known Bo for a really long time. You know, at different stages in your life, you don't necessarily realize this till later, but you look up to people. Even, you know, high school kids, even high school kids, which now seem like pretty young. There's people looking up to high school kids. It's the junior high kids. There's people looking up to the junior high kids. So anyway, Bo was in this church I started going to, the very first church we ever went to, and I was in junior high, and Bo was, all I knew was two things about Bo. He loved Jesus and he played basketball. And so I was just like, that's cool. I admired you from the start. I don't think you knew me at that age, but I knew who you were. He played at Placer High School, he's a big basketball star. And so I've had this admiration.
So you say.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I saw you. Yeah, you were in the Auburn Journal, so that was local stardom.
I guess that is.
That's right.
That's a star.
You're a
right
local
there.
Celebrity.
Yeah. Auburn Journal.
Big time. And then I just admired Bo from afar. Here's a story that I want to share to start, and I don't know if I've shared this with you, but I came home from Chicago or someplace during a summer break when I was in college, and you were speaking at a Sunday night service. And there's another minister on the platform. His name was Tim. And I was there. I was excited to hear you speak. And I watched you walk to the pulpit and look at Tim. And Tim does this. And you kind of give a nod. And then you preach the sermon. And I was like, what's this? I couldn't get, what is this? So after church, I went up to you and I'm like, what was this whole thing from Tim? And do you remember this? It's 30 years ago.
This.
Yeah, it would be shocking if you did. So here's the deal. You said, well, I had two sermons that I was thinking about giving, couldn't decide which one, was praying about it. You literally walk to the pulpit, not sure which sermon's the right sermon for the night. Tim gives you the two, and you preach the two sermon.
That does
that
sound
was astounding
like me.
To me.
Was,
I don't know if that was responsible or just really spirit-led, but I was loving that.
Probably not responsible, but quite fun. Right?
Yeah.
You don't know what you're going to speak on until you're right up there.
That's a way to keep it edgy.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you're here. We're going to talk. We're going to chat a little bit this morning. Can you start us off with just a layman's definition of sociology? I talked about theology, what we believe, formation, how we grow. How do you approach the church? What is sociology, and specifically sociology of the church?
So sociology is basically the science of society. So we study human behavior in groups, organizations. Kind of a sister science is psychology. Psychology studies everything inside the person. Sociology studies everything that the people do outside of that realm. So we're doing kind of observing everything from interpersonal interaction to, you know, on a national scale, what's going on in the culture. So that's what sociologists study. And then within sociology, there are a ton of sub-disciplines like the sociology of religion. And that's where my emphasis and interest was because, you know, when I started, one of my professors was a Nazarene professor at Pepperdine University who was a godly man and just wanted to use his skills and his academic learning to help the church. And so I got involved with a group called the Association of Nazarene Sociologists and Researchers, and we would have these gatherings, and we would study the church and come back and try to inform and help the church. So,
wow. Great.
Yeah.
I think you touched on it there, but can you tell us a little bit more about why you as a Christian and even as a Christian minister are so interested in sociology?
Well, for me personally, it comes down to an integration of faith and life, that I may have gifts and talents and mine may be in the realm of academia, right? So, you know, I enjoy studying, you know, I enjoy reading books, I enjoy going out and gathering data. It's fun for me. Mm-hmm. May not be fun for you, but that for me is fun. And so taking that and integrating it with my faith, this understanding of I believe in Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and I believe that he is active and involved in the world. And how can I help the church or myself or others understand how we are made by God, how mm-hmm. we've been created, and how that shapes our interaction and how our culture influences that, and what's that dynamic? And that's the second part of it, is really I'm fascinated by the relationship between church and culture. That to me is the question that I'll spend the rest of my days trying to answer, whether I'm teaching or not. Mm-hmm. that is just wrestling in my brain all the time.
That's great.
What is the relationship? What is that dynamic between church and culture?
That's great. And we spent last several weeks talking about the culture specifically. Now we're going to start talking about the church. One of the questions I'm asked every week is, why does Emmaus do this like this? Why do we do this thing this way? Why don't we do this thing that way, right? And many of us have been to other churches at some point in our lives. Maybe we've seen churches online. Maybe we've just witnessed church gatherings, worship gatherings in movies. You have friends that go to different churches, and they do things differently. They may even believe the same things we believe, but their worship gatherings look different. The way they engage in culture maybe looks different. The order of their service, even the ways they emphasize how to live. Sometimes, even though both groups Christian, maybe one group emphasizes live like this, another group emphasizes live like this. So you spent the last several years studying churches, and when I learned about your basic observations of churches, was this limited to North America?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I thought it provided, your framework provided a really clear way of understanding and viewing the church. So in other words, a way to answer the question, why do we do this way? And why don't we do this another way? So I'm going to ask you if you just take us through the basic overview of the types of churches that you observed. And we have like a legitimate set of sermon notes today. So there's a diagram that Bo's going to take us through. And then there's more space to write on the back. So would you talk about this to us for a bit?
Sure.
This is so interesting to me.
Yeah. So welcome to my class. And I'm sure that's why you came to church this morning, to get a little sociology. But hey, you didn't have to pay tuition. So this diagram, this is the end. Like, this is still in process for me. This is coming out of my research. I went into, at the time I wrote my dissertation, about 38 churches. I'm up over 40 now because I'm still working on a piece of this. But this little diagram describes the three patterns that I observed as I was going around visiting churches in the Midwest and the Pacific Northwest and California. So I visited predominantly, I started with non-denominational churches, but then I started incorporating churches of various denominations as well. And these are the three patterns I found are in these three corners of this triangle. My dissertation, I focused on the top two because those two, if you notice that little dashed line between them I've labeled, they have something that they share in common. So the corners are these patterns of churches, and the lines between them are something that two of those patterns kind of share, is the way I've designed this, you know, model. So if you look at the first two, I've labeled two patterns of churches, and I'll describe these here in a second, consumer individualist and community orientation. And those are the two patterns. The one at the bottom, established traditional. So let me start with that one real quick. That's the one that I'm spending some time on, getting a little more data on now as I try to get my dissertation published and stuff, things that we do in academics. But established traditional, if you notice what's shared between these two churches is literally almost the one that this one is the farthest away from. So that line between those top two is cultural adaptation. I found that these two churches, consumer individualist and community oriented, were very much interested in making changes to adapt to the culture around them. Mm-hmm. But the established traditional church didn't want that at all. Like, if you picture an Amish church, I mean, the Amish are literally trying not to be influenced by the culture mm-hmm. at all, to the point that zippers are too much technology, right? So they are purposefully becoming very distant from the culture. Yeah. Now, these other two types, they're very much trying to make changes to adapt to the culture. So I'll describe these really quick. So I'm going to give you kind of a quick rundown, and then I'm going to illustrate, and we've got some pictures and things just to kind of show you and tell you some stories to give you. But let me give you the quick rundown. The consumer individualist in this upper corner here shares with the established traditional this inside pool. Everything is designed to kind of get you to come to church. That's where things happen. And in that, they have values that tend to come from market consumerism. So these are churches that have developed patterns that have been influenced by the corporate business world. So these are churches that operate according to what I call a business metaphor, and in particular, what we would label a growth imperative. This is an important part of capitalism, is if you start a business, you have to grow it. You have to keep getting new customers. The goal is to get bigger, make more profits, right? So this is the kind of the corporate business model. And if you don't, your competition is going to run you out of the marketplace, essentially. That's sort of the essentials of the capitalist economy in that sense. So they tend to utilize, these churches, some of the things that work in this culture. Now, that's important. Here's where, you know, that I'm telling you and describing churches from a sociological point of view. So as sociologists, we're very much interested in what the data shows, and we are going to interpret that data for sure. So some of my biases are going to come in, and you'll hear them later. But we're trying to describe the patterns that I saw. Okay. And that may or may be a truth that churches may or may not want to hear, right? But this is what I observed. So in these churches, I observed patterns of things like using market slogans, right? So these are churches that had billboards, literally, billboards with their church slogan. There was one church that had their billboard. When I drove to that church in the Midwest and I pulled up to the stoplight, here was this billboard with the slogan. And when I arrived at the church, the same slogan was large on the windows of the church. And so they're using this kind of marketing thing, same thing that businesses do, advertising, to get people to come to church. And they tended to have a conference-style, workshop-oriented church. There were lots of things going on there, lots of things you could learn at that church. And if you went to their worship style is what I described as a concert metaphor, that it was trying to kind of look like a concert. Now, before we get too critical, that is a really good adaptation for a church in this culture to make people feel welcome and comfortable when they walk into a church if they've never been or they haven't been in a long time. As soon as they walk in their minds they go, oh, I know what to do here. This is a concert. It looks like a concert, sounds like a concert. I know what to do at a concert. We come in and we sing along with our favorite band, right? And so that's what people do. They're immediately welcomed in, right? So this is a really good adaptation for this culture. Right, and then they tended to emphasize, you know, offering and money collection. Some of that was to kind of keep that growing. There's a lot of things going on at these churches to keep people coming into the church. But they would always stop and pray for an offering and talk about the offering before they take it. There was a tendency toward these churches being in suburban locations, and very often in business parks. So they would find a location that was kind of cheap to rent or to build, and the churches looked like big square warehouses, typically. And the practice of the church tended to be oriented toward the individual, that there were a lot of these things going on, a lot of classes, a lot of the sermon topics were about helping you be a better you, which, if you haven't heard it, is a very good adaptation to our culture. And I'll talk about that here in a little bit. It was a lot about helping you be a better Christian, be better in your spiritual life, but also be better in your relationships, and even be better with everything in life, down to your finances. There were churches offering, hey, come to our church, we'll help you with your taxes, come tax time. Then there's this, on the other side, the other corner, sharing that cultural adaptation, but also share this unique link with the established traditional churches, which was an emphasis or a foundation on their theology and on the theological and liturgical kind of worship practice. They tend to have that ancient liturgy and followed similar patterns to what established churches did in their worship. But these churches tended to emphasize involvement and connection to their neighborhood and surrounding community.
You're talking about the community ones.
Yeah, this is the community orientation, so up in the other corner.
Okay.
And these churches, the activity tended to be connected with the local community. Their church activities tended to be about inviting but involving or going out into the community and being with the community and doing things that their surrounding community did. And there tended to be this external focus of these churches, that there were relationships with outsiders was valued and emphasized. And so a lot of the church activities and even the church worship were designed in this way. And I'll give you some examples when we get to that. But they also tended to share that church heritage of a liturgy, kind of that ancient liturgy. They followed the church calendar, the seasons of the church year, like Lent leading up to Easter and Advent at Christmas time, and they tended to talk about those in church. And they tended to de-emphasize monetary collection and the offering. I even went to one church that I went there, this one church, several of these churches I went to for long periods of time. This one church, in the entire time, more than a year, they never took an offering, and they never mentioned the offering once. There were just boxes in the back in the lobby where you could drop it in a little slot, like a little voting ballot box, where you could put your offering in, and that was it. And so they tended to discuss and encourage activism, particularly if there were things that their neighbors were interested in. And sometimes, you know, that would lead to interest in what the surrounding community was interested in, what was going on in their neighborhood at the time. Mm-hmm. And then there was also some churches, not all, but they would have an emphasis on artistic expression and would have opportunity or even demonstrations of artistic expression in their church, in their sanctuary, and in their worship services. And these had a tendency to be more in urban centers or at least a central city location of a downtown, mm-hmm. and tended to emphasize that sort of we're a part of our downtown and part of our city. And then I mentioned the established traditional, but there were more practices that were the same for decades, perhaps centuries, right? Yeah. Greek Orthodox Church would fit in that category. They haven't changed their worship since the first century. They're not going to, mm-hmm. right? And so that's their pattern of worship. So their worship was more emphasized or influenced by history and tradition than it was any kind of cultural adaptation. So those are the good. Three types. So good.
That's helpful.
Kind of a nice little summary of those.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Okay, let's talk about four examples of how this plays out. Talk about location and lights. And
right. Well, let's see if they've got this one picture. I want to give you guys, because I'm a professor, I want to see if I can give you a quiz. Let's see. Yeah, that one. Can you guys see this, what's in this picture? It might be a little too dark for you. There's a woman preacher up there, and can you see what's behind her? What'd you say? Pirates. Okay, so this is pirates. There's it's actually a large treasure chest behind her. And I don't know if you can see it, but on the pulpit is a ship's wheel, like a steering wheel of a ship. And this was happened, this picture I took when I was visiting this church, and they happened to have a pirate emphasis where there was a contest, and people that came to church, if they'd completed these activities, including following the pastors on social media, they could follow a treasure map, and they would be entered into a drawing for Disneyland. Some ideas for you, Nathan.
I just know.
Saying. Which of these three types that I described, which would you put this church in? Consumer individualist, you're very right. Yes, that's exactly where I would put them. But just to give you that quick quiz, this, you know, some of this stuff, I'm not, you know, this is the thing that's really, you go out there and you study these churches, you collect this data, you observe, and then you come back and you almost feel like telling people, I'm not making this up.
Right, right.
Like, churches do this.
Yeah.
But, and the interesting thing is, this is one church, and so I'm giving you some extreme examples, so let's be fair. But I did see patterns mm-hmm. of this type of, that would fit to this, right? So when I'm saying consumerism, what's going on here? It's about, hey, come to our church. We want that inward church, you know, pull to get you to come to all these things that will help you make you a better you. And some of them in that treasure map were things that would help you join a small group. Sure. If you do that, but it's all about becoming more involved in the church and connecting in that way to help you be a better you.
Yeah, and this is their primary method of trying to adapt to our culture.
To our culture, which...
Right. It's not hard to see that this is working for selling cereal or soft drinks or sports teams or whatever, so...
We're having a contest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see.
Let's talk about some examples.
So just to talk about location, I mentioned the difference in location, but I want to get into a little bit of the, you know, the building that typically consumer individualists tend to be centered around convenience. Like, we're going to put our church in a place that is kind of right off the, you know, near the strip mall in suburbia. Mm-hmm. And so here's you know, a couple pictures. And they tended to have these sort of warehouse-looking buildings. This one in particular is in the Midwest, and it is located in a business park. When I drove in there on a Sunday, there was nobody in any parking lot. You know, next door there was a vacuum cleaner repair, I think, and another one. And all the businesses were shut down, except there's this one that looks like the same building as all these other businesses, but it's right here, this warehouse where their church is.
Yeah.
And so lots of parking available there, but convenient. This that church in particular had multiple locations in the same city to make it more convenient for people to arrive.
Okay. Yeah.
This one, interestingly, it would be interesting to see if you guys could guess this, but here's a picture of this church. On the left is their little signboard that is kind of blown up on the right, and you can't see it, but this is located right in the middle of downtown. And it says on here, you know, I've blocked out the name of the church because I'm trying to be anonymous and I promised anonymity to the people that I interviewed. But if you can see under on the sign there, it says Church and Gallery. It's very interesting. Hmm. The most interesting thing about it is that this church is located in this city in what's known as the Arts District. And it's in downtown where there are all these art galleries. And every Friday, the first, it's called First Friday, so I'll probably give away the city if I give too many details. But on First Fridays, all the art galleries open up for free, and people go in and look at all the art, and they come. And this church has their own art gallery right here in the middle of their urban center. Mm-hmm. And they have a gallery in the church where people could come, and they emphasize being a part of what's going on in this neighborhood, in the urban downtown of this of the city.
Yeah.
Which I would categorize as here that would be more of that community orientation, an adaptation to the culture, but more emphasizing we're going to be connected with what's going on in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
And we're going to participate with our neighbors in this. Here's another one. Don't want to give this one. This one's a little more. This one's in California. No help from the studio audience, please. Don't give this one away, so let's keep it anonymous. But just another quiz, which category would you put this one in? Consumer individualist. What does this look like to you? Disneyland, doesn't it? Right? So this is a different church than the one who was offering a trip to Disneyland, but here was, this was for a big children's camp that was going on at the time to attract the kids and get them to come in. And this is what sociologists call enchantment. There's actually a term that we use, that enchantment is, in the business world, you almost have to be like the Mall of America. You almost have to have this draw to get people to come in to shop. Mm-hmm. And sociologists, when we observe that among consumer behavior and in the culture, we call that enchantment. But it actually came from the church. I'm getting too much into the sociological history, but church influenced shopping, especially around Christmas time, and now it's kind of come full circle. Now the business world is influencing the church. Mm. And so this is kind of this adaptation, is we have to enchant to attract the attention of people in our culture who are barraged every day with new so and flashy things. And something to get their attention. And so this is one of the adaptations that this church made. Here's a different church. This one's in the Midwest. And some of these are a little blurry, but these are me taking pictures and trying not to be offensive, right? I'm walking, I'm visiting people's churches. And as I'm going through the parking lot, here's a church that... This one is a little bit of a close-up, but this is right in the church parking lot. These are picnic tables that have been set aside for the homeless.
Okay.
So in that neighborhood, in that community, they've set aside. And if you go to the next one, I'm trying to get, you still have to zoom in, but just where it's cut off to the left is the church building. So it's just right there, 20 feet from the church building. This church built showers in their church building where the homeless could come and take a shower. Hmm. They have a weekly volunteer ministry of washing the dirty towels that the homeless have used when they've come to shower in their place. Hmm. And so your location matters, and what you do with the building in that location matters. There's patterns, right? I see this over and over again. I see churches kind of adapting in this pattern and adapting in this pattern. Mm-hmm. Keep going. Yeah,
talk to us about lights.
Lights. So this is one of the most interesting things. It got down to a point where I could almost tell you everything about your church based on how it was lit. I kid you not, but I literally had a friend of mine on the phone on the East Coast, and we were chatting about what I was working on. They said, oh, yeah, well, my brother's a pastor of a church. And I said, when you walk in the door, is it dark? And is it kind of almost painted black with lights focused on the stage? And they said, yes. And then I just listed the entire pattern. And they said, that's exactly what they do at that church. Mm-hmm. So I could almost predict from this. But here's this one. Let's see this church. When you walk in, and this is what I meant by that concert metaphor. You walk in, and it's dark like a concert, lights focused on the stage. Have you been to a church yet that has a fog machine? Okay, so you've seen this. So you're all sociologists too, right? You've seen this. So again, not trying to give you too many ideas for what you could do, but this is one pattern of worship where the fog machine accents the lights and allows the lights to shine through so you can see actually the lighting and the stage lighting. And then you can go to the next one. So here's another one. This church, and sometimes I was wondering, is it just about size? Are we only analyzing just mega churches? This church sanctuary on this picture is seats less than 100 people. Now, they have multiple services, right? But it's a small sanctuary, but still, dark interior, focus of the lights on the stage to get that concert metaphor, right? So you walk in, it feels like a concert. There was one church, I walked in the door, like imagine walking in these back doors, and I stopped short. I literally could not see 1 foot in front of my face. It was so dark. Hmm. And I had to wait, and an usher came up with a little flashlight, grabbed me by the arm and said, let me help you, and walked me to my seat, because I couldn't see when I walked in. Taking a look in the mirror just to see. I found it interesting that, I don't know that this means anything, here's some just irrelevant data, but I was always kind of blue and purple lights a lot. I don't know why, but it was always that kind of dark sanctuary. Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at another one. To contrast, here's a sanctuary of a large church, but fairly well lit, and I'll show you another picture of this church and tell you a little bit more about them. But here's another one, a smaller church, but lit and using kind of some candles that are typical of historical church liturgy. Mm-hmm. And another one, now this interesting thing about this church, you might almost say, boy, that looks pretty traditional. That may be an established traditional church. The interesting thing, when I talk about location, is that this church purposely bought this church from an older congregation that was established traditional, and the congregation had grown old, and most of the people had either died off or had left. And so they bought in this inner city location that they wanted to minister to. Mm-hmm. Their location was purposely designated, and they said, well, we'll buy that church from you so that we could be there. So the church structure looks older and looks more traditional, but it's really because this church wanted to be in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so they literally kind of made this deal with the church and bought that. Yeah.
Sorry, these are kind of dark. We could see them better if it weren't so light in here. I think, yeah.
Fair point.
Talk to us about coffee. Can you... what does coffee tell us about a church?
Okay, so coffee, every church I visited had coffee. Hallelujah, amen. Right, for those of us. Most of you, you guys don't know this, but this is my church. This is where I want to be a member. Like, we're still transferring it from Kansas City, but this is my church. But you guys never see me because I try to sleep in on Sunday as long as I can. So I'm usually at the 11 o'clock. So if I yawn, I'm sorry. But thank goodness, thank God that there's caffeine and coffee. But every church had coffee. But the interesting thing was, how did they do coffee? 58% of those churches that I would have labeled consumer individualist sold coffee in a coffee shop. 58% had their own coffee shop. And you can see a picture here of one. You see the counter, right? And it looks just like a coffee shop. And another one, if you want to show, I think the next one looks the same. This one's a little blurry because I was trying not to be, rude. But you see kind of the counter, and you've got the menu on in the back. And so they were more likely, the consumer individualist type was more likely to be selling coffee. Often they would use the proceeds to underwrite some of the ministries, right? Because they're all about having all these things that you can do and come and that will help you. And then if we take a look at the next one, now these next two are a little bit more tricky. But if you notice on this one, you could just walk right up and use the, the little Airvoy and get your coffee. This one I would have categorized community oriented, and they gave away their coffee for free. And if you take a look at the next one, see here in this counter, this is the church that you saw that had the homeless outside.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see the donuts lined up, the coffee just beyond that. What you don't see is just on the other side of that gentleman in the shirt there is a same box, like a donut box, but it's full of fried chicken. Not the kind of thing you might want at 9 in the morning, but they offer it there as something a little more substantial for the homeless who come and attend.
Interesting, yeah.
And so that's a part of their ministry is to, here's free coffee and donuts and free fried chicken for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Coffee gets really, really interesting. There was one church that I visited for a long period of time and got to know one of the board members, and they came to talk to me because this church was starting. While I was visiting, they were starting their coffee shop. And this church on their website was really interesting because all the language talked in language that I would have said was community-oriented. Like the foundations, the reason why they started this church was to be a part of the community, and it had all of that description. But then they installed this coffee shop. And then it got really interesting, and I have some of this quote here. So if you put up some of the quote, it's this. They have put in the coffee shop, and this is a board member talking to me about this, but the church decided to stop giving away free bread. They had been offering free bread to the people in the community, so they'd get it from the supermarkets, and they would just distribute it, whoever wanted. Anybody at the church could come and get it. And they said, but they decided to stop doing this. And they, and I quote, did not want it to conflict with their brand. Very interesting. So you see, when I say I'm not making this up, when I say consumer individualist, right, it's using that language of the business world. right? And they want to set up the coffee shop as a business, and they don't want the quality of the coffee shop brand to be watered down. They don't want people eating low-quality bread in the coffee shop and confusing it with their pastries. And the staff, they told me, are really frustrated with the kind of church they're becoming. But here was a church wrestling with, who are we going to become? Are we community-oriented or are we consumer-individualist? Would be my observation. That they're wrestling with that tension in the culture. How do we respond to the culture around us? And so this church was struggling with, what do we do with coffee? Right? Interesting.
Good. Touch on communion quickly, and then we'll ask just a couple more quick questions.
So, yeah, if you want to go right to this picture, this is that large, well-lit church that you saw a picture of just a minute ago. And here's me. It's a little blurry, but there's me sneaking from the pews a picture. This is communion. Communion at this church was about 20 to 30 minutes long. Took about 4 or 5 choruses to sing through to get through it. People would come up in groups and take communion down front together, either as families or small groups. I saw one group of 22 people in a huddle, arm in arm, taking communion together. It took them about 15 minutes to get through all together, but they were all down front. Could not have been just one family, too many people. Had to have been a small group or something going on. But everybody waited until everybody was done. And then I went to a consumer individualist church, and let me give you the most extreme example of communion that I saw. At this church, the service ended, and I was standing up trying to meet people so I could try to get an interview and talk to someone, and when I stood up, everybody started moving to the doors, and at the doors, there was an usher standing at the door, so if you can imagine, like, by this doorway, an usher standing there with a bucket full of those little individually wrapped communion, so there's a little cup with the juice in it, and then it's sealed off, and then on top of that is a little wafer for the bread, and that's sealed off. And they were just there. After the service is over, you could just grab them on your way out the door. And I watched as people would walk by and say thank you and grab theirs and just walk out. Just leave church with their little communion, little individually wrapped. I saw some, if you can imagine, right there, if you go through this door over here, there's that little
alley.
The little alcove. So there's one door and then another set, right? Or there's kind of the little, it's sort of sealed off, right? It's a little alley, but I saw people stop and take their communion just right there, just like they'd grab it and they would kind of pull off to the side, stand up against the wall and kind of huddle with their family member, and then they'd leave.
Yeah.
And I saw just a real tremendous contrast between, you know, taking 20 minutes for communion, all, you know, waiting for each other all together, and it's just the service is over and you can just take it and on your way, and people seem to be very happy with that, right? It's an adaptation, right, to the culture.
Yeah.
But they seem to be on their way to live their busy lives, right? Yeah. It's like, they were really appreciative, like, thank you. They grab their communion and leave. But I found that fascinating, right? And to get to what does service look at the end of service, here's about 20 minutes after in one type of church. Can you guess which type? I would say community-oriented. Right. 20 minutes later, there's still groups of people talking, meeting new people. So easy to get interviews at churches like that. I would just stand there. I'd stand up at the end of the service. People would turn around and say, hi.
Yeah.
Can I meet you? Who are you? Like, what? And I would just talk for a while. And then I'd say, hey, I'm doing this research. You want to talk to me about your church? And they'd say, yeah. But then here's a different kind of church. Here's 5 minutes after. People are lined up on their way out the door. To give you a reverse angle, I took this picture. There's only one group of 3 people I found remaining. And one person in the bottom left corner, you can't see him, but they're picking up trash. Like 5 minutes after, people are they're leaving. They're on the way. We lead these busy lives. And so the church is adapting in a way. It's just, hey, service is over. We're on to the next thing. Here's another one, people leaving. Now, to be fair, there were people gathered in the lobby. They did have a coffee shop, so people were lined up to get their coffee. They also had a bookshop. People were lined up to pick up books. And there were people standing around talking. So, you know, let's be fair. I'm trying to give you some extreme examples to illustrate.
Yeah.
But there were people standing around the lobby talking. But as I walked by, I only heard family groups talking about what they were going to do for lunch or the things that I heard. But that's it. So
that's
do we have time to do some quick
So I want to hear, we just have a few more minutes before all of our kids volunteers quit. I want to know from your perspective, if you could take your sociologist hat off for a second, keep your pastor hat on and tell us why this matters. I mean, I'm kind of a church nerd. We've talked about this for hours. Yeah. I would love to keep, but tell us why you feel like this matters. In other words, what kind of disciple is produced by a consumerist, individualist church? What kind of a disciple is produced by a community-oriented church?
Right. Well, for me, and this is, you've probably heard my bias already, but as a sociologist, all of these are legitimate adaptations to the culture. Mm-hmm. So if I'm just looking at it neutrally from a sociological standpoint, these are just adaptations to the culture. But theologically, this is where I wrestle, because it is that very question. What kind of disciple is being generated out of a church that's focused on helping you be a better you? You know, the one quote from a person I saw on their social media, they attended two different consumer individualist churches, and they said, oh, I just got these new notebooks. I'm so excited to be my ultimate self, because these are going to help me. Mm-hmm. And literally, like, hashtag the better life, right? And that was their expression, right? Mm-hmm. So what kind of disciple? Here's a person who goes to two of these churches, and the focus is all about developing to become my ultimate self. I want to be a better me. Mm-hmm. Right, and you've heard that in the culture.
Sure.
Versus a church that is adapting to the culture, but to be relevant to the culture, are finding their relevance by being involved in their neighborhood, by being connected to what's going around them locally. Right.
So it's still a cultural adaptation.
Absolutely.
But it's a different one. It's not let's take on the marketing values. It's let's engage.
Right.
In the culture, relationally, is that what you would?
Exactly. It's both are trying. Both types are trying to be relevant.
Yeah.
To the culture.
Yeah.
And there's some sociology behind that we could talk about. Yeah. But in our pursuit of relevance in the world around us, that relationship between church and culture, how do we do it? Mm-hmm. Makes a difference, I think, in terms of what's being produced out of that. What kind of people attend that? What are we teaching our congregation about who we are to be in the world?
Yep.
And if we adapt one way to the culture, we are absorbing, right? We're letting more, we have fewer filters and we're letting more of the culture in. That's how we adapt to the culture. Mm-hmm. But in another way, we put on or take off or put on different filters.
Yeah.
And we're saying we're going to open our doors and we're going to live among you and be in your midst and be involved in what you're doing. And we're going to have a gallery in our church because that's what our neighborhood does.
Yep.
And that's who we're going to be.
Yeah, what does our neighborhood do? How can we do that, represent Christ in that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how can we be relevant in that way?
Yeah, that's so good. Good. So could you wrap up? When we met, you said, I want to make sure that we don't just talk about sociology the whole time, but that I give a word or that we give a word to somebody who's just struggling today. And you had such a great insight that's related to what, can you wrap us up by taking us to 2 Timothy and giving us that?
Yeah, in 2 Timothy chapter 4, you know, Paul just writes this ending that's just, you know, like he does in kind of greetings in his letters to these churches. Mm-hmm. And he writes this kind of wrap up, and you can tell he's kind of hurting. He's kind of going through it. Mm-hmm. I think at this time, Paul's in prison, he's writing, and he's telling Timothy, you know, do your best to come to me quickly, right? He's saying, come visit me. You know, I'm in need. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he starts telling and naming people. He's naming names, you know, for Demas. You know, I don't know if that's the way to pronounce the name. I'm not Greek. You know, he loved the world and he deserted me and he's gone to Thessalonica. And, you know, this person went to Galatia and Titus, you know, to Dalmatia. Only Luke is with me. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I'm feeling abandoned. Can you come? And then he talks about, you know, there was this metal worker who did me harm. Hmm. You know, I'm just imagining a guy with a hammer, you know, that does metal work and then just beating on Paul. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, come and can you bring my cloak, the one that I left over there at this person's house? And he's like naming names. Mm-hmm. And can you, you know, hurry and bring my parchments, right? But he's using up all this parchment, you know, and scroll to name all these names and say, you know, here's this person at my defense. Nobody came to my support, but there were these people who were there for me. Greet this person, Priscilla and Aquila, right? You know, this household, Erastus at Corinth. You know, tell this person, and he's naming. He knows what's going on in people's lives. I left so and so over there because they were sick. Yep. This person's still over there. Yep. Can you say hi? This person who's here says hello. Mm-hmm. And he's naming all these names that he can pronounce, that he knows their faces. Mm-hmm. And then he says these really interesting things, right? Mm-hmm. You know, can you come before winter and bring that cloak? Because it's getting cold. And when Paul's at this just devastating part in his life, mm-hmm. who does he reach out to?
Yeah.
I mean, he's been a traveling missionary, but he reaches out to the people he knows will be there for him.
Amen. Yeah.
He reaches out to the people whose names he can name, whose faces he can picture in his mind.
Right.
And he says, I can trust you to come.
Right.
Because I'm in need.
Mm-hmm.
Will you help me? Will you come before winter? Hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, there's some still here that greet you, and they send their greetings. And we know each other. And that's community.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
That's Amen. A community orientation.
Amen. Amen. Thanks, Bo.